I was the only kindergartner that could spell meteorologist.
The man they call the weatherman around here.
It can really be the difference between, you know, the portfolio doing okay or the portfolio doing great.
Who would have thought? You know, years later, we're standing again in a TV studio.
Here we are.
Yeah.
It's so much more than back in the 50s and 60s and 70s where you'd launch a weather balloon and say a prayer.
Yeah.
It could be a very interesting winter coming up.
Hello and welcome to Uniper's Market Insights. Thanks for tuning in again. My name is Florian Oberlin, and don't be surprised, today not on my side, Gregor Pett. He's currently at the CERAWeek in Houston. But since we have a special topic today, I'm very happy to welcome somebody else, the man they call the weatherman around here, and probably one of my favorite persons at Uniper, the one and only Jess Torpy. Hi, Jess.
Thank you for the invitation. Great to be here.
Well, you know, thank you for coming over. You are usually based in London.
Right.
So thanks for visiting us here.
Pleasure.
In Düsseldorf. And it's actually not your first time in a TV studio. And we want to talk about the weather today.
Sure.
But before we do that, we, of course, want to get to know you a little bit better. So can you share with us maybe what your background is, how you ended up with this very specialized topic, and especially when you know how you ended up here at Uniper.
Well, let's go back to 1978.
All right.
Okay, I'm two and a half years old. I'm in the bathtub, bubble bath.
Yeah.
And I tell my mother, look at the bubbles. They look like the satellite picture from the TV news. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know what to make of that. And that's all I ever wanted to do ever. Mm-hmm. I was the only kindergartner that could spell meteorologist.
Okay.
I mean, most adults can't.
Yeah.
And it's just something I always wanted to do. So I went to university. I got a four-year degree in meteorology and mm-hmm. studied the science. And I had an internship at a large commercial firm in the U.S., AccuWeather. Mm-hmm. And then it took off from there. I spent 10 years in a setting just like this in a television studio. Yeah. That was in New York State and in North Carolina. And then in 2007, I got the chance to jump over to the energy sector. Mm-hmm. So I worked for Exelon in the U.S., which is kind of a Uniper-type organization over there. It was heavy nuclear, but we had a nice portfolio that we had otherwise. And it was a good way to get introduced to energy trading. Mm-hmm. After that, I worked for Freepoint Commodities in Connecticut, and that was a... we didn't really have the assets. It was more of a pure trading shop. So that was an interesting, different direction. And then, I got a call in 2013 from somebody that saw my profile on LinkedIn and said, are you interested in Germany? I said, yeah, I'm interested in Germany. Yeah, sure. Next thing I know, I'm on a plane to Dusseldorf for an interview. And I've been here ever since. I started with E.ON in January of 2014, and now Uniper for all this time that we've been a company, these 10 years. So
yes.
Yeah.
Good deal. Yeah, I remember that was the first time we got in contact as well.
Yep.
One of my last, I think, phone calls before I left the relocation office.
You were one of the first people I interacted with here. So.
And who would have thought? You know, years later, we're standing again in a TV studio.
Here we are.
Yeah. Full circle.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you for coming over, as I mentioned. And, you know, we have this segment in the Uniper's Market Insights with our trainees. So we usually kick off our detailed question with a question from a trainee. And this time is Emily. So, Emily, what is your question to Jess?
Hello, my name is Emily Wobleski. I am a dual student here in my second year, and I'm also currently supporting the power delivery management team. And that's why I have the question, why does Uniper need a team of meteorologists?
Well, Emily, in energy, almost everything is exposed to weather. We have robust renewables, solar, wind, hydro. We have temperatures that impact how much heating and cooling demand our customers are going to use. Mm-hmm. Weather is something that is a universal. It impacts everybody equally. It doesn't matter what your race, religion, creed is, any of that. It impacts everybody equally. So that's one of the reasons so many people talk with each other about weather. But, you know, specifically in our business, we have massive exposure to Nordic precipitation and gas prices, which are heavily influenced by whether it's really warm or really cold or very windy or very sunny or a lack thereof of those things. And we're a global business, so we have to take into account what's happening in East Asia and the United States and Canada and places that LNG would move to. And it's just a job that's never, ever boring.
Yeah,
that's the best part.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it quite a lot in the past as well, and
sure.
I always find it fascinating.
Yeah.
And I mean, if we stay in Germany or wider Europe, let's talk about the importance of renewables is increasing. Of course, is then also the importance of weather increasing accordingly?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, meteorologists are going to have jobs because of the growth of renewables.
Yeah.
I mean, Germany wants to have 115 gig of wind onshore by 2030, and Germany's on target for that. And it takes a lot to know when those turbines are going to start rotating, when they're going to need to stop and be curtailed because there's too much wind.
Yeah.
I mean, PV has just grown exponentially.
Yeah.
That's a tough thing to diagnose because is it connected to the grid? Is it just working at your house if you have solar panels? And then hydrology is always something that matters, I mean, especially for the Nordic countries.
Yeah.
Norway, for an example, 90% of electricity generated there is via hydro.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's all these regional quirks, not just Germany, but throughout Europe that we have to take into account.
Understood. Yeah, and I think especially for Uniper, because we're using still a lot of gas in our power production.
Right.
I think, and as a bridge technology, if the sun is not shining or wind is not blowing,
that's
I think
right.
that's very important for us to know as well
sure.
when there's actually will be wind or not, right? And I think something to look out for. You mentioned LNG.
Yes.
Because that's, you know, currently also a hot topic right now. You mentioned that you also take a look at that. Can you maybe explain a little bit in detail on when you look to Asia, how does that play a role for LNG, for example?
Yeah, I mean, LNG is really one of those flex fuels. It's that liquefied natural gas that you can put on ships and move it from places that have a lot of energy to places that need a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And if you can give our traders, as an example here, a heads up that, hey, it looks like Japan's going to have a really hot summer, or it doesn't look exceptionally hot in the U.S., they might not need as much supply there.
Yeah.
It can really be the difference between, you know, the portfolio doing okay or the portfolio doing great. And that's one of the reasons you have a meteorological team, is to take advantage of the insight that that potentially could allow you to have.
Very interesting,
yeah.
For sure. And within your team, do you have different geographies you're covering?
Absolutely. We have three other meteorologists. Mm-hmm. Christian's been with us for decades, literally. He's our real Nordic specialist, and we have so much exposure there with the hydro that he's taken that on as his challenge, dealing with the offices in Sweden and in Norway. We have Andreas, he's got a PhD in meteorology, and his real specialty is continental Europe, and he does a lot of the renewables behind the scenes that are so important to get that information out to our people.
Yeah.
Jarno, he's been with us for a while now, and he does the UK, and he does a lot of short-term stuff with our team that can... They can make a lot of money if they know intraday there's going to be a lot of PV or, you know, lack of wind or whatever the scenario is.
Yeah.
And then you got myself, who, I mean, I'm embedded in London with the gas team there, but we're talking to our teammates in Singapore and Calgary and Houston, and we're trying to trade East Asian gas versus U.S. gas versus TTF European gas. And try and maximize the value on that. So it really is an international job.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And the UK forecast is actually always the first email I open every morning, because I kind of think that, you know, 1 or 2 days later, it has the same impact on Germany. So
it's true.
So it's always the first email in the morning.
That's a very intelligent approach. I like that.
You know, I try.
I like that.
Yes, but you mentioned that you are a lot of people within your team. How does a everyday workday look for you?
Well, I also don't want to leave out our hydrologist, Amar. He does does all the nitty gritty to come up with actionable values for not just Europe but now overseas. So, Amar, you're an important part of the team too. I don't want to leave you out. Sorry, your question again was:
how does a normal working day look for you?
Oh, it's anything but 9 to 5. Yeah. We start off early on the weather team.
What does
most
early
of the
mean?
Time, well, I mean, Christian, for example, I know he's at his desk by 5 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. Okay.
In office almost every day. Mm-hmm. For us in London, we tend to start at home and avoid all the tube people packed in like sardines and then go into the office at a more reasonable hour.
Yeah.
But it's an early start. I mean, some days the weather's so interesting that I pull an all-nighter. I just want to see the new information coming in or watch the hurricane as it moves on shore. Most days, it's a start around 5:30, 6 in that time frame.
Yeah.
And sometimes the day doesn't end until 6 or 7 in the evening. Yeah. And even at home in the evening, sometimes you're looking at data because you want to share that if new stuff comes in and make sure that everybody's aware. But a typical day at the office, you're interacting with the people that are in office with you.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of posting on Teams. That's new since the pandemic, of course.
Yeah.
You used to do everything face-to-face, but now so much is electronic. Yeah. I host a meeting, not just for our gas team, but also I host the morning meeting in North America. So, a lot of interacting with the traders and analysts that rely on the information that we provide for them.
And it's so great to see somebody being so enthusiastic about a topic. It's really amazing to see. And, knowing you for a while now, I can just underline that.
That's great. And, we're constantly looking at social media and checking the news wires. We want our people to know about things that are happening in weather from us, not learning from other sources.
Yeah.
So trying to stay ahead of all of that in a social media world is a bit of a challenge, too. So that's certainly a component of it these days.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And let's go into detail a little bit of the different things you forecast. From your experience now, and you have quite a lot, what do you think is the most difficult to forecast? Is it solar? Is it the wind? Hydro? Is there something where you say, oh, that's tricky?
That is a tough question to answer because each one of these things comes with its own quirks.
Mm-hmm.
Renewables has grown so exponentially with the time that I've started doing this in 2006, 2007 mm-hmm. to now, that's a massive part of the job. And, you have to know when these wind farms will start generating, because if the wind's not strong enough,
mm-hmm.
the turbines don't move. But if the wind is too intense, you can damage the mechanisms inside the turbines, and you have to break them and curtail them.
Mm-hmm.
So using Germany as an example, you can have a storm that moves through central Germany, and it won't hit solar or wind because most of the solar is in the south and most of the wind's in the north.
Yeah.
So a difference in storm track of 50 kilometers, 100 kilometers can make or break an outlook.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super challenging in that aspect. Sometimes you have to take into account in winter, maybe there's snow on the solar panels and you're not going to get a lot of solar generation if that's the case. And then words have entered the vocabulary in recent years, Dunkelflaute being a primary example, it's both dark and not a lot of wind.
Yeah.
And in that case, you have to really turn to other fuels. You have to rely on the nuclear generation in France and the surrounding countries.
Yeah.
You have to rely on coal sometimes, and certainly gas is the flex fuel.
Yeah, I mean, Dunkelflaute, that's something Gregor and I regularly talk about in this format as well.
Yes.
But, I mean, all of this data you are getting, isn't it so much that to form a view on this, how tricky do you grade that?
Well, the explosion of AI modeling is something that's a new dynamic in the last couple of years, too. Mm-hmm. And, of course, everybody thinks that that's going to be the best because it's the new shiny toy. Mm-hmm. But you have a lot of dynamical models that we've had for years and decades in some examples that, you know, sometimes they outshine what is available from artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And now you're merging some of those historical models with artificial intelligence, and you're getting a whole new perspective on things.
Mm-hmm.
So the volume of information that we have to digest as a weather team every day is just growing all the time. And there's new innovations. For years, there weren't a lot of innovations. You would get the models from the US and the models from Europe, and you'd make a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. But now everybody's getting in on the AI game. Even big companies are doing it. Yeah. And they're all trying to one-up each other, and you're trying to find out which one of these new shiny toys is the most accurate and the best. And there's never a straightforward answer to that. Yeah. So you got to take that into account every day.
How much is experience a factor?
It's a huge part of it. And, you know, to work with a MET team here, I think combined we have over 90 years of experience.
Wow. Okay.
So with four guys and that much experience,
yeah.
There's not a lot you haven't seen. But, you know, even though we have our regional specialties, we all take a look at the global perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Europe's not in a box by itself. It's impacted by what happens upstream, downstream. And the more global your outlook is initially, the easier it is to make a diagnosis of what the weather might be on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
So that's really the approach that we take as a team, and it's worked out well.
Okay. Let's stay with the regional topic
yeah.
for one second here.
Sure.
Because I recently saw an article that we published on our intranet here about a gentleman that is sent out, I think it was Sweden, just to measure snow. And, you know, I was fascinated what the reason behind that was. Can you maybe share what the reason of, you know, taking snow samples is?
You want to know what the depth of snow is, especially from a hydrology perspective, because mm-hmm. eventually that's going to melt and flow into rivers, and eventually that's going to interact with a dam or a reservoir. So it's kind of an inexact science. Measuring snow a lot is still the old-fashioned plop the ruler in yeah. in a few different locations and take the average.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's things you can do with satellite imagery, too, nowadays that you didn't have as a tool back in the 80s and 90s that that also help to gauge these things.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, another very important aspect of the day-to-day work that we do here.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah.
Another interesting topic, and Gregor and I discussed this in our trading special as well, weather can be traded. I know that you are not in a trading business per se, but you definitely give some advice on the people that are doing this. What is your kind of perspective on trading there?
Weather trading is a way to de-risk.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're doing long-range outlooks, especially, some of our traders are trading gas years ahead. You want to take as long a view as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the things that we generate here would be a seasonal forecast. And even I was here in Dusseldorf last week, and we were talking with the global gas team about the possible implications for next winter already.
Wow.
You know, they our traders could just take the 10-year average and run with it, or the 30-year average and run with it. But if mm-hmm. we can say, hey, listen, it looks like it might even be warmer than the 10-year normal next
yeah.
winter, or it might be colder than the 30-year normal, this is the kind of thing that they can take advantage of and hope to make some money off of it.
Okay. And one big impact actually comes to our next question. That comes from Yasin, one of our trainees as well. Let's have a look at what he wants to know.
Hello, my name is Yasin Benhamdane, and I'm currently doing my apprenticeship as an office management clerk at Unipa. My question is there a weather phenomenon that affects the weather around the whole world?
Thank you for that question. Yes, there's multiple phenomena around the world that impact the global scale of things. Chief among them is one of your favorite topics.
yeah.
You have El Nino, which is the warming of the tropical Pacific sea surface temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
And you have La Nina, which is cooler anomalies in the same area. The Pacific is so huge that what happens there can be influential everywhere. We, in this past winter, were dealing with a marginal La Nina event, mm-hmm. which was the cool waters there in the Pacific. And what that helped to do was to make the jet stream very wavy across the northern hemisphere. And if you get stuck in one of those waves that is a dip, you have the airflow that comes in from the north and really brings you a cooler spell. Mm-hmm. So we did get into a couple of those where we had cold weather, we didn't have a lot of wind, and that's where things got really tricky with the gas prices moving up and down, and volatility was a big part of this past winter. Yeah. But the marginal La Nina that we had, the cool sea surface temperatures, is shifting now, and all the models are showing a rise toward an El Nino event of some magnitude mm-hmm. for the second half of this year. And when you have very warm sea surface temperatures in the Pacific, yeah. it almost acts like you're turning a heater on, mm-hmm. and it can influence the entire hemisphere. Yeah. So, a lot of data is skewing in that direction. Not all La Niñas and El Niños are created equally. Mm-hmm. If you have a weak or moderate event, it's impactful in the Pacific basin. If you have a strong event, which some of the data is showing, it can be impactful yeah. for all consumption areas around the world.
I always find that fascinating.
it's a really
interesting topic.
And you watch these numbers every day. You get a reading, and it goes up, it goes down. It's never linear, yeah. the movements, but you look at the big picture and what the data is saying, and broken down on a monthly basis. And some of these models go 9 months into the future.
Yeah.
And you have to take that with a grain of salt, because it's hard enough to forecast intraday, let yeah. alone take what a model's saying 9 months from now. But you look for trends.
Yeah.
And it could be a very interesting winter coming up.
Now that you mention it, what time frame do you think where you are 99% sure this happens? Is it a week, 2 weeks, month? What is it?
Well, that also depends on what you're trying to forecast. Yeah. If you want a really accurate wind or PV prediction, mm-hmm. you don't want to go more than 5, 6, 7 days ahead, and yeah. even that's pushing it sometimes. Yeah. If you want to look at what general temperature trends might be, or if it's going to be wetter or drier as a tendency, you can look at historical matches. We have a pretty robust database, goes all the way back to 1950, and you can look at these things and you can make judgments on which direction versus normal things might be, which can be helpful if you're trying to make a decision far out.
Yeah. Okay, so when we look at our weather app, we can kind of throw out the 2 week forecast.
If it's giving you a specific number, if you look at it 2 weeks from now, it might not exactly be that number.
Yeah.
But the amount of data that computer models are ingesting, it's so much more than back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, where you'd launch a weather balloon and say a prayer.
Yeah.
It's so much data from satellites is incorporated in these things now that it's making the initialized parameters on computer models so much better. Mm-hmm. Not everything is perfect, but the more data that comes in and the finer resolution we can make these models, yeah. that's one of the things AI is achieving. It's really bringing down the resolution.
Yeah.
The better the weather forecasts are going to be in general.
Okay, yeah. And I know that, I was guilty of that, but I know that you are always approached by colleagues when, vacation is up
sure.
for booking. Can you maybe share with us what areas to avoid this summer, or where to book vacation?
Yeah, I mean, there's some people that would get a question like that from a colleague and say, I'm busy, I got other things to do, but I'm the one that decided to make this a career.
Yeah.
So I love talking about weather, even if it's for holidays or weddings. Let's talk about it. That's my philosophy. But for this summer, some of the vendors are coming out with their summer predictions. Looks like a pretty warm and fairly dry summer for Italy, for southeastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little on the weather, the wetter side in northwest Europe, not as warm
mm-hmm.
In places like the Low Countries and parts of France. So yeah, maybe okay. Italy and Greece would be okay. the kind of the wink and the nod for the summer.
Okay, all right. Well, I have to catch some Yankee games, so
the season's prediction. Underway now. Yeah. Here we go.
And I promise you, at a certain point, we definitely do a baseball special here as well. Somehow.
Sounds good. Sounds good to me.
Jess, that was actually my last question to you. So thank you very much again for all of the insights. I hope you out there take a lot of information from that as well. And hopefully talk to you soon as well.
Thank you. It's been a great time here.
All right. Thank you. And to you out there, thank you very much for tuning in. Hope you tune in next time again. Until then, bye-bye.